The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. As I mentioned yesterday, we're off and running on the new school year with our orientation lectures underway. We've got 2 days of that, and then classes, first day of classes, start tomorrow morning. So we're excited about that. And really, when you look at either of the campuses, they're campuses of peace and unity. You don't see the chaos, you don't see the confusion, you don't see the craziness. We truly are living in extraordinary times. The Bible calls it the last days, and that's why every day we're seeing so many unthinkable events happening every day. Things that would have seemed just absolutely inconceivable a few years ago, and now they're just becoming a daily occurrence. These are the times that Herbert Armstrong warned of decades ago, and we've brought many of his quotes to your attention over the years, things he was writing back in 1940, 1950. This one here, right from the end of his life, 1984, he said, "Actually, we are at present in a sort of a lull before the great storm." He talked in the last years of his life about God holding events back. There was a delay. And then, of course, after his death, my father came along and said, relying on Revelation 10, a prophecy there that says we're entering into a time of no more delay. But going back to this quote from 1984, Mr. Armstrong said, "The stage is set for a sudden, massive, and violent world explosion that will plunge the world into the most destructive violence ever experienced by mankind." You put that statement together with so many prophecies, the Olivet prophecy from Jesus Christ, what Paul said in 2 Timothy 3 about the last days being dangerous. Coming into the last days, Peter talked about scoffers coming in the last days. You look at events today and really you have to wonder, what must the scoffers be thinking? Those that maybe did come along and embrace the truth during the ministry of Herbert Armstrong. And as we know, the majority fell away from the truth. We often pray for those brethren, those wayward brethren that knew the truth so many years ago and have since forsaken God. But God will quickly receive them back if they will turn, if they will return to God. Mr. Armstrong said in 1984, "I fully believe God is holding back this final global eruption and Christ's coming to allow time for our work to be completed." So that really is what God's primary focus is on. All these end-time prophecies that we refer to, the sure word of Bible prophecy, as it says in 2 Peter 1, and yet the activity on this earth that is uppermost in God's mind is the work of his true church. There is a work that this church must complete and finish. You look at the rest of the world, and as I say, you see chaos, you see confusion, you see violence, you see division, you see hatred. He talks in this quote about world leaders being bewildered. They just don't know how to solve the problems of this world. And then he says, finally, "Yet it is all made clear and plain in the book more widely distributed in more languages than any other book, the Holy Bible. They," speaking of world leaders, "they are bewildered and helpless because they do not understand the Bible. It is a coded book and cannot be understood except by the indwelling of God's Holy Spirit." You look at what's happening in the world today, and that ought to be motivation enough for you to be a seeker of God's Spirit. so that your mind might be open to the truth, so that you can understand the sure word of Bible prophecy, so that you can understand why the world is the way it is today. Revelation 12 and verse 12 says that there's rejoicing in heaven because the demons, Satan the devil, they've been cast down to this earth. And so they rejoice in heaven, and yet God says, woe unto the inhabitants of the earth. That would be us. That would be human civilization. It says the devil has come down to you having great wrath because he knows that he has but a short time. The devil has come down to you, the Bible says. He knows his time is up. He's been kicked out of heaven. And so here he is, and God says, woe unto the earth. My father's talked about a whole new level of suffering that the devil brings to this earth. We know he's the god of this world. We know he's the prince of the power of the air. But now, like Revelation 12 brings out, we know he's been confined to this earth. This is where he's doing all of his evil deeds. And look at how much he's disrupting. Look at how much he's agitating. Look at how much anger and violence he's provoking. Every night in some of these U.S. cities, every single night. Seattle, Portland, Chicago, New York City. In America Under Attack, my father wrote this, that army of demons is still around. So they were cast out of heaven and to this earth. And my father says, look, they're still around. They wrecked the church and then they moved on to other areas. Where are they? This army of demons, are they inactive? Are they passive? Are they just bystanders? Or are they disrupting and agitating? Are they thrusting this world into a period of unprecedented turmoil? You had this massive blast in Lebanon just last week, and it brings down the entire government, or at least the ruling party. That was just one explosion. Sam's alerted me to all these other mysterious explosions in Russia and Baltimore. We had a big explosion in Birmingham just up the road from us yesterday. These are bizarre events, and all it took in the case of Lebanon to bring down the ruling government is a massive explosion. And I guess it's still categorized as an accident. And yet that brings down the government. Here's a translator. He's translating the speech of the Lebanese Prime Minister Hassan Diab yesterday, announcing his resignation. Clip one.
We need to be part of the people. That's why I declare today the resignation of this government. God bless Lebanon. God bless Lebanon.
That's the resigning prime minister of Lebanon amid all the protests that are taking place there in that country. France, we told you about the visit from Macron last Thursday. And France was quick to issue a statement following his resignation. They said the priority must be the rapid formation of a government that can live up to the expectations of the people, whose mission will be to meet the main challenges of the country, especially the reconstruction of Beirut and reforms without which the country will plunge into economic, social, and political chaos. And really, they've been plunged into that even before this blast came along. We covered that on last week's program. All of the social turmoil, the collapse of the currency, much of it brought on here recently because of the worldwide lockdown. All of these nations just collapsing. And of course, the prophetic significance here, as I've said, is Lebanon's going to swing into Europe's camp, away from Iran and into Europe's camp, in fulfillment of Psalm 83. That happened just last week because of a mysterious explosion. One event that's been completely overshadowed over the last many months is Hong Kong being taken over by China. It's been obscured by all of these other wounds, and many of them, in the case of the United States, self-inflicted. Yesterday, this famous Hong Kong publisher. He's a leading pro-democracy figure. He was arrested in this crackdown all across Hong Kong. I guess he runs Apple Daily, this popular news site. His name's Jimmy Lai. And he's arrested, put into jail. The communist Chinese, they don't want any dissent. They don't want a dissenting voice. Does that sound familiar? This is the way the radical left operates. Just crush any and all forms of dissent. Lock them up. Delete them. Cancel them. And so that's what's happening. That's in Little Hong Kong. We told you years ago about the significance of handing over this precious Seagate. Britain used to control it. Britain gave it up more than 20 years ago. China assured them, oh yeah, Hong Kong will always have its peace and the liberties that they enjoy. It'll always be this financial hub, this economic hub, this modern success story. Tiny little Hong Kong. And here comes China amid all of these other tumultuous events in the world today, just devouring not Hong Kong alone, but the South China Sea. It's expanding its empire. Are we living in the last days? Are these normal times? Every day, as I say, it seems like it's something new. Chaos in little Belarus after a contested election. That's not unusual in the days that we're living in. This is the new normal. The incumbent said that he won with a large majority of the votes. The leader of the opposition party fled to Lithuania. They've got unprecedented protests going on in that little nation. This is just normal now. I'm back in the United States, and we've been covering the rioting and the protesting and the news media coverage. The dishonest and radical leftist news media, the Democrat media complex. Yesterday there was a shooting just outside the White House. This is the new normal. Just right outside the window that President Trump was speaking before the news media. And then in come the Secret Service. They whisk him out. He comes back moments later and he says, well, yes, there was a shooting. One of the Secret Service agents had to shoot this agitator. And they're both in the hospital. It made me think of this statement that the president made on Friday when he was in Ohio. A pretty strange statement, but I guess not so strange when you consider the new normal. I think he's alluding to the Durham investigation and what the Attorney General Barr is looking into with respect to all of the lawlessness going on during that transition period, 2016 to 2017. And in speaking of that and all the spying that was going on, the illegal spying, the president said this in Ohio, clip 3.
So I have a lot of enemies out there. This may be the last time you'll see me for a while. A lot of very, very rich enemies, but they are not happy with what I'm doing. But I figure we have one chance to do it, and no other president's going to do what I do.
That's the president on Friday talking about this may be one of the last times you see me. And then a couple days later, they hurry him out of the press room because of a shooting that happens. I'm not saying they're connected necessarily. I'm just pointing out yet another event, yet another seemingly unthinkable event. You can add it to the list for 2020. He's saying that he has one shot to get this done, one chance to do it, one chance to expose this evil. And he's doing his part. I played those AG Barr clips from yesterday, or Sunday night, I guess it was, where he talked about the revolution that's going on the streets of America. These Bolsheviks, these communists that are taking to the streets. They want to overturn the system. The Seattle City Council voted just yesterday to defund the police, to lay off 100 police officers in the greater Seattle area. And so the Seattle police chief, Carmen Best, I don't know if it's official yet, but evidently there are reports saying that she's going to resign in protest. They're cutting the budget. They're even cutting her salary and then laying off 100 policemen. This is their response to the mob. Surrender. Surrender. Appease. So her hands are tied. Law enforcement is handcuffed in Seattle, in Portland. The mobs have taken control. I told you about Chicago yesterday. There was a police shooting. Well, in fact, the police were fired at. What are the police supposed to do? They hear that a policeman fired at a criminal and automatically assumed that it wasn't justified. And so what? What do? They take to the streets. They spill into the expensive district in downtown Chicago, and they start ramming their vehicles through the windows of these shops. All based upon a lie. Another policeman shot one of our own. In fact, he was shooting in self-defense. But don't let the facts get in the way of a good mob. Don't let the facts get in the way of an opportunity to loot. And so they take to the streets. And they smash up all of these, and some of the aerial shots. You'd think you're in a third world country. This is the United States of America. Add that to another extraordinary event. An unthinkable event. Just in this calendar year, 2020, here's the Chicago police superintendent responding to the violence in Chicago Sunday night. Clip two.
CPD became aware of several social media posts encouraging looting downtown. Officers were dispatched to our downtown area once we got word of the social media posts. 400 officers were dispatched to our downtown. As the officers arrived to our downtown, the first incident happened at a store near the 87th and the Dan Ryan Expressway. Soon, car caravans were headed into the loop. This was not an organized protest. Rather, this was an incident of pure criminality. This was an act of violence against our police officers and against our city.
That's the police superintendent. That vans were bringing in the thugs to smash up the city. And they were responding to the pretext. All that they needed was a lie. A lie that someone was shot by a police officer. That's all that it takes. And then the city's burned down. And then the cities are smashed up. What about these businesses? Laura Ingraham was on location in Minneapolis in a segment last night. 10 weeks on from the looting and the rioting there. And she's interviewing all of these business people. Nothing has happened. The city council has done nothing to help these businesses. They're more concerned about defunding the police like Seattle just did. And so all of these businesses, they've just been emptied out. She was interviewing one shop owner who, well, the city officials had to come in because it was this dangerous pit. It had been bottomed out, burned to the ground, a big hole in the earth. And the city had to come just to protect passersby. They put up a chain link fence. Then they sent the bill to the owner of the business that was burned down. Here his business has been destroyed, and he's getting bills from the city saying, hey, we had to build a fence around that so we could use $3,000-$4,000. The city, of course, is broke. This is the new normal. Unthinkable. Unthinkable events. Just a few years ago, what would we think of something such as this? Today, it's the new normal. Chicago, the police superintendent, all these media posts, they were encouraging the looting. Hey, we've got a chance. Hey, there was a shooting. This could be the false narrative we need to destroy Chicago. And so caravans of criminals showed up. This was not a protest, he said. This was pure criminality. And then Washington, D.C. How many of you heard about the worst mass shooting this year in an American city? It happened over the weekend. Did you hear about it? But not for Fox News. No one would hear about it. It happened in Washington, D.C. over the weekend. 21 people shot in one incident. One of them died. 21 people shot in one incident. And yet not a peep coming from CNN, from MSNBC. Like I say, you've got to go over to Fox just to hear about it. This is how Tucker Carlson reported on it on his show last night, clip 5.
Over the weekend, 21 people were shot in a single incident in Washington. More than half of them were women. One was a D.C. police officer. It was the single biggest mass shooting in America this year, and yet you probably heard nothing about it. Members of Congress didn't lock arms on the House floor to demand an end to the gun violence. CNN didn't book a procession of weepy teenage gun control activists or an extended town hall meeting. News organizations barely touched the story, and when they did, they moved on fast. It wouldn't help the Biden campaign to talk about it, so they didn't talk about it. As far as we can tell, neither CNN nor MSNBC even mentioned it today. 21 people shot in a group in our capital city, and they acted like it didn't happen. But it did happen. We're showing it to you on the screen right now. 21 African Americans shot by gunmen, yet the media spent all weekend telling you about how Simon Cowell fell off his electric bike in Malibu. Because really, Black Lives Matter. MSNBC wants you to know that. It's grotesque. But it's now the rule. Dead bodies don't count unless they are politically useful dead bodies.
Isn't that the truth? They don't matter. 21 black people shot in one incident, over half of them women, and yet you don't even hear about it? It doesn't even get covered on the news? Do those black lives matter? It happened in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., the capital of the United States of America. And yet, unless Tucker Carlson reports it, it's not even newsworthy. Not in 2020. Certainly not in an election year. Certainly not at a time when that could possibly hurt Joe Biden's chances. You just got to blot it out. You've got to delete it, just like you delete those statues. Just like you cancel those statues. Just like you delete all forms of resistance. Truth fails. That's what your Bible says. Truth is failing. It's as if we're waking up each morning scrambling just to find out the truth of what actually happened over the last 24 hours. Because so much of it's being blotted out. There was an incident in Harlem, I believe it was. Police showing up to assist a little girl, an 11-year-old girl who was being assaulted, and they had to call in reinforcements. They had to call in police reinforcements because when they showed up to help an 11-year-old girl, people in the neighborhood started attacking the police. They started throwing objects at the police. This is the new normal. You can add that to the list of inconceivable events in 2020. Speaking of New York City, from the Daily Caller, it says, New York City rifle permit applications and pistol license requests have surged this year. According to the New York City Police Department, data obtained by the Daily Caller, New York City residents submitted nearly 149% more handgun permits and nearly 340% more rifle shotgun permits from January 1 to June 28th compared to the same period last year. Just last year. 150% increase on handguns. 340% increase on rifles and shotguns. People are arming themselves. They're getting ready for what's ahead. What's ahead then? What's coming? What's going to happen? Where is this leading? Well, you should be seeking after God's truth and His Holy Spirit, the power of His Spirit, so that God can open your mind to the truth and help for you to understand the sure word of Bible prophecy. As I said, we often go back to Herbert Armstrong and what he was saying so many years ago. This is what he said right at the outset of the long run that The Plain Truth had, his magazine. This was the opening issue, February 1934. He said, "In these anxious days of stress, turmoil, and strife, of revolution and economic collapse, of war and fear of war, of confusion before a bewildering onslaught of creeds, dogmas, fables, and false teachings, the plain truth makes its humble and modest appearance." Then he goes on and talks about the mission of the plain truth, to help lead those who honestly are hungering and thirsting after righteousness out of this modern confusion of tongues and into the truth as it is in Christ Jesus. The truth, that alone is what sets us free. That's Mr. Armstrong writing, what, about 85 years ago. All these things that he wrote about that many people mocked him for, that there were many scoffers who saw those statements, those booklets, those magazines put out by the Worldwide Church of God. And yet look at our world today, and go back to the communist infiltration, that quote from the 1950s and many others after that. It's all happening. And now you just have one commentator after the next acknowledging it. Look, we're being taken over by this communist revolution. Sean Hannity, he's one of the commentators on Fox. His latest book is basically a book about how America's been fundamentally transformed. Barack Obama said as much in 2008. A lot of people didn't take him seriously. Look at where we are just 12 years on from that. Hannity says, "I wrote this book to sound the alarm. We're turning into a country that our grandparents would not recognize." That's a transformation, right? Dennis Prager had a piece at PJ Media. He said that Americans have long been proud of the fact that, unlike European countries, America never went the route of totalitarianism as embodied in communism, fascism, and Nazism. This achievement may be coming to an end. See, we've prided ourselves in avoiding just going along with those fascist movements, those communist movements that so many in the world have done. But now that time may be coming to an end. He goes through some important history in this article. What led up to World War I, and how that before World War I, there were certain Christian ideals kind of embedded into European culture. But they came out of World War I and abandoned those values. European nations did. And it gave rise to these totalitarian movements leading into the 1940s. We're more familiar with that history. But it says here that left a void that was almost immediately filled by communism, fascism, and Nazism. And then it talks about the history in Russia, what led up to the Russian Revolution there in the early 1900s or 1917. It talks about all of the bloodshed and carnage brought on by the communist states throughout the 20th century. Tens of millions of people, tens of millions of human beings snuffed out, deleted, canceled because of these totalitarian states. And through it all, the United States and Britain fighting for liberty, fighting for freedom. It says, though there were communist fellow travelers, Nazi sympathizers, racists, and anti-Semites in the United States, neither communism nor fascism nor Nazism took root there. The primary reason was that, unlike most Europeans, Americans did not lose their faith in Judeo-Christian religions and values, or in America after World War I. America remained so religious that in 1954, the words "under God" were inserted into the Pledge of Allegiance recited daily in American schools. And we've commented here recently about the way it used to be in schools for Britain and for the United States, going back to the 1950s. However, Prager writes, by the 1950s, faith in America, Christianity, and what we call the bourgeois middle class values was largely limited to older Americans. The post-World War II baby boomer generation was already being indoctrinated in secularism and anti-Americanism. It says as early as 1962, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that school prayer was unconstitutional. So they wanted to boot God and the Bible out of school. That was in the 1960s. He talks about the protests in the 1960s and how you could, it was common to see America spelled with a K. America, in some cases, KKK. As this communist foothold, it gained its foothold and then the influence, it spread. That's what Prager's talking about. He says, when I was a graduate or at graduate school at Columbia in the early 1970s, I was taught that men and women are not inherently different from one another and that the Cold War was between two superpowers, equally at fault, not between freedom and tyranny. You see, you can see some faults on both sides. That's the way that it started. But now we're in 2020, and now the fault, it lies on the side of, squarely on the side of America and Britain. They are the reason the world has the troubles it has today. Prager says this, another generation has passed, and the post-Christian left-wing baby boomers have come close to achieving complete success. The mainstream print and electronic media, universities, high schools, and elementary schools, the arts, and now sports, have all been conquered. Listen to this. They've all been conquered by the left. By the left. By the radical left. By the communist left. By the Marxist left. I played the clip yesterday from President Trump. These are Marxist agitators that have taken to the streets. They've been conquered. It says, except for sports, from the beginning of the 20th century, they were almost all liberal, but now they are left. They are left. He says, we now have the answer to the question, what will happen to America if Americans lose faith in God and country, as the Europeans did after World War I? What will happen to America when Christianity dies, as it did in Europe after World War I? Well, he puts a lot of faith in traditional Christianity, but there is something to be said for that Judeo-Christian ethic on which our founding documents were established. You take that away and you remove the foundation. And here we are, just barreling along on this path toward godlessness, lawlessness. There's nothing to hold us firm. There's no firm foundation. It says here, the way things now look, America may have its bout with some totalitarian doctrine, almost surely some form of leftism. He says, liberty has never been a left-wing value. They've never been for that. They want control. And so that's why you can listen to the rest of that Tucker Carlson episode or segment and see that all weekend they're talking about, as he said, Simon Cowell and then this gathering in South Dakota, this big event for Harley-Davidson drivers. Now, they're the left wing, they're very concerned about that. They could care less about 21 people being shot up in Washington, D.C., our own capital city. That's okay. That sort of thing goes on all the time in D.C. and Chicago. So we're not going to cover that. We're going to tell you where the real danger is. It's those Trump voters in South Dakota. It's so predictable. It says, another communist norm taking root in America is the rewriting of the American past. We're living a famous Soviet dissident joke. And that is, in the Soviet Union, the future is known. It's the past that's always changing. Yes, indeed, the past is now changing in our cancel culture as well. Listen to this report from Campus Reform's editor-in-chief, Cabot Phillips. He was on Fox talking about what's happened to modern education in the United States. Clip 4.
And what we're seeing today is a fundamental reshaping of our education system to institutionalize indoctrination. We're now teaching people that our country is not something to be proud of, but that it's evil. We're teaching people in the curriculum that our history is something that should make them not proud of their country. And so it started by simply removing American exceptionalism from classes, because that was a victim of cancel culture, because teaching that America is great might be offensive to people because there are negative parts of our history. And moving on from there, from removing American exceptionalism, it now became simply removing history altogether that makes people uncomfortable because it doesn't fit today's narrative. And you might be asking, where are the academics that are stepping up to defend this? Where are the politicians calling out what's being taught in class and defending the integrity of our education system? They're terrified of calling it out because they know that the first sign of pushback against today's modern day left will lead to them getting called a racist, getting called a bigot, and they don't want that. So they are terrified into silence and submission. That's why they're not pushing back on this.
Terrified into silence and submission. There's no courage. No one who's willing to stand up to the mob. And so the fundamental, as he says, the fundamental reshaping of our institutions, it continues. Look at what's happened to education today. Nobody stood against it. You see all these Republicans caving into the pressure from the radical left, denouncing President Trump in a tweet that he makes. Even as they see these founding institutions just totally destroyed. How many times are we seeing that kind of language? Fundamentally reshaping. That's Barack Obama's vow from 2008. And he said there at the end, or I guess in the middle of that clip, he talked about them now removing all history. You think that's preposterous? You think that's outlandish? To think something like that. Listen to this Chicago Democrat, LaShawn Ford, and what he's calling for just the other day, clip six.
So today, I'm calling for the abolishment of history classes in Illinois. We're concerned that current school history teachings lead to white privilege and a racist society.
So it's all about 1619 Project. It's all about the white privilege and a racist society. And so what's the solution? Well, erase history altogether. I've got news for that Democrat. It's already happened. The universities have already erased it. If they haven't erased it, they've revised it. Look at the speed with which the 1619 Project is entering into elementary schools, high schools, colleges even. Look at what comes out of the mouths of some of our young people, even the educated ones, that then step into journalism. You see a lot of these young reporters, so much ignorance. Here's this CNN reporter yesterday talking about how that the president, his convention speech, because of COVID-19, it's either going to be at the White House or Gettysburg. And in the mind of this reporter, Gettysburg is somehow a powerful, powerful symbol of the Confederacy, of all things. This is clip seven.
And Pam, we've reported that President Trump is considering delivering his GOP nomination acceptance speech from the White House, but amid some criticism of that potential venue, the president is now floating another one. This time, he's talking about the hallowed Civil War battlefield in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. But that could be controversial too, particularly because this is a president who has consistently positioned himself as a defender of Confederate symbols and monuments to Confederate generals. Pam?
Yeah, that's a fair point to make.
Never mind that the most famous Confederate general, Robert E. Lee, sustained his worst ever defeat at Gettysburg. Never mind that Gettysburg was in a northern state, Pennsylvania. Never mind that this is where Lincoln gave his most famous address, or one of them, the Emancipator of Slaves. You could think of a thousand reasons why President Trump would want to do it just to make a statement against the Confederacy. But here's this young reporter. Oh, he's so sure. Well, if the Confederacy, if it's not this famous Confederate landmark, we'll just make it one and say that the president's racist. So simple. It's so simple. You see how it works? You just put him into it, change the narrative, and call him a racist. The name calling begins. It's easy. It's so easy to delete the history. We know about the future. We know where we're headed, said the Soviet dissident. It's the past that's ever changing. It's the past that's always being revised. deep, deep divisions. There's a story at PJ Media how that the United States was less divided during the Civil War than it is today. Is that true? Could that be true? You think about the Civil War, the 700,000-800,000 casualties, hundreds of thousands dying from both sides. Both sides digging in their heels. The carnage, even there at Gettysburg. But listen to the points that this article makes. It says there is a growing worry these days about whether or not we are headed for another civil war. Now, mark that down also as another extraordinary event or at least statement that now it just is routine. It's just common to see that or to read that in the world of 2020. Here's PJ Media saying we're headed for another civil war. It says, and whether the divisions in American society are as bad as they were in the run-up to what is still the bloodiest war in American history, it says, in fact, there's no comparison between the divisions between Americans today and the run-up to the Civil War. The ones today are far worse. Now, listen to the reasons why. It says, a civil war is by definition a war between citizens of the same country, and the American Civil War was certainly that. Both sides, though, listen, both sides revered Washington, Jefferson, and the other founding fathers. Confederate spokesmen often termed the war their own war for independence, insisting that it was a new iteration of the same desire for self-determination that had led the American War of Independence against Britain. It says here, both sides respected the United States Constitution to the extent that the Constitution of the Confederate States of America was essentially a copy of that of the nation the Confederates were leaving, with a few minor modifications. So they wanted to split apart, but they wanted to take the same founding documents. They wanted to take the same founding heroes with them. The radical left is not looking for that. They want to burn down the system and then create their Marxist utopia, just like the attorney general said the other night on Fox. It says it protected the freedom of speech. This is speaking of the Constitution, the freedom of the press and the freedom of religion. It allowed for the right of the people to keep and bear arms and so on. And then listen to this final paragraph. It says, no less an authority than Abraham Lincoln noted the similarity of the two sides in his second inaugural address, even as he pointed out the one thing that sharply distinguished them. This is quoting Lincoln's second inaugural. He said, both read the same Bible and pray to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other. It may seem strange that any men should dare to ask a just God's assistance in wringing their bread from the sweat of the other man's faces, of other men's faces, but let us judge not that we be not judged. And like I covered on yesterday's show, it was my father a few months back who said that, look, if we're going to solve the deep hatred and division that you see in the United States of America today, we're going to have to look at what Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, did to heal those wounds and to bring the nation together. This is what my father said in his June Key of David program, clip 9.
Today, many leaders will tell you that they think America is headed toward a civil war, and if we were to actually follow the example of Lincoln and many Americans during the Civil War, we could avoid that bloody Civil War. We could avoid it altogether.
Avoid it altogether if you follow Lincoln's lead. And what was he doing in 1865? What was he doing in 1864? He was calling upon the United States. He was calling upon the entire nation to turn to God in repentance, to seek God's help in solving this civil war, in ending this civil war. Here's my father from back in the 1990s, quoting from Abraham Lincoln's declaration of a day of thanksgiving, clip 10.
Now therefore I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States, do hereby appoint and set apart the last Thursday in November next as a day which I desire to be observed by all my fellow citizens wherever they may then be, as a day of thanksgiving and praise to Almighty God, the beneficent Creator and Ruler of the universe. I mean, this man is sounding somewhat like a prophet of God. A beautiful proclamation.
He's sounding somewhat like a prophet of God. I played the longer version of that clip for you yesterday and covered some history with you that it really is inspiring to think about how God shaped his life, Abraham Lincoln's life. Abraham Lincoln studied the Bible. He meditated on God's laws. He was very familiar with the characters of the Bible. He knew the stories. He knew the history. He didn't understand God's purpose and plan, but he revered the law. He certainly did, even when he was a young man. Some remarkable history. Lincoln gave a famous speech, or if it's not as famous to some, it should be. Back in 1838, he was just 28 years of age. And there was a lot, in the 1830s, there was a lot of social disorder in the United States, lots of mob violence. The country even then was pretty well divided between the free states and the slave states. You had all of these outspoken abolitionist zealots who would sometimes take matters into their own hands. And then you, of course, had the violent pro-slavery gangs, and these two would clash quite often in Mississippi at this time. I'm just giving you a little bit of context of what led up to this speech that a young Lincoln gave in 1838. In Mississippi, there were hooligans that had been murdered and then hung from trees. In St. Louis, there was a black man accused of murder, and the mob didn't wait for justice. The mob took matters into its own hands and murdered the black man. And then in Lincoln's home state of Illinois, you had this radical abolitionist, Elijah Lovejoy. He was murdered by a pro-slavery mob. As I say, America was divided. America was turning to lawlessness. America was turning to vigilante justice. We've got to do it for justice, right? The mob is justified. And so here was a young man, just a decade removed from his teen years, and he delivered this powerful warning to America, a fledgling nation. He told them, this is what we need to do to survive. Lincoln's speech, "The Perpetuation of Our Political Institutions," that was the title. How are we going to survive this division? How are we going to remain unified? Well, Lincoln, in his view, you can read that speech and see that he considered the greatest threat to American existence coming from within, a threat that would come from within, not from without. Lincoln looked at this lawless spirit that was spreading across America, and he said, look, this is dangerous. It's kind of like what Dennis Prager said in that column I just read to you. Now, that's Prager looking at the America today, 2020. My father, back a few months ago, said, we need to look at Lincoln, too. We need to go back to what he did during the time of America's greatest crisis. Lincoln was quite concerned about the lawless spirit in America. He said this in that speech, such are the effects of mob law, and such as the scenes becoming more and more frequent in this land so lately framed for love and law and order. It says, whenever the vicious portion of population shall be permitted to gather in bands of hundreds and thousands and burn churches, ravage and rob provision stores, throw printing presses into rivers, shoot editors, and hang and burn obnoxious persons at pleasure and with impunity, depend on it, this government cannot last. It's as if he's describing what we're seeing today in Portland, in Chicago, in Seattle, in New York City. Whenever you see this kind of violence going on with impunity, this cannot last. He went on to say, well, what happens if the rioters go unpunished? What are the more law-abiding citizens going to do? If they look out and they see that the violence, and they see that the looters, the robbers, The criminals, they're out there and they're going unpunished. What are they going to do? Well, they're going to do what a lot of New Yorkers are doing. They're buying rifles and handguns. Listen to this. Lincoln said, good men, men who love tranquility, who desire to abide by the laws and enjoy their benefits, who would gladly spill their blood in the defense of their country, seeing their property destroyed, their families insulted, and their lives endangered, their persons injured, and seeing nothing in prospect that forebodes a change for the better, become tired. Tired of and disgusted with a government that offers them no protection. You see, think Seattle, laying off 100 police officers, canceling the police force, defunding the police force. And what Lincoln says is, look, people are just going to take matters into their own hands on both sides. When you see law and order break down, well, what about if there are bad laws? The Constitution at that time, of course, it didn't enshrine slavery as a practice, but it did tolerate it. And the founders were hoping that containing it would eventually cause it to disappear. It didn't happen. So what's the proper recourse for those dissatisfied with the laws at that time? Lincoln explained, let every man remember that to violate the law is to trample on the blood of his father and to tear the character of his own and his children's liberty. He says, let reverence for the laws be breathed by every American mother to the lisping babe that prattles on her lap. Well, basically, he goes on and says, look, after saying, even if it's a bad law, we have to obey it and then change it properly. There are constitutional ways that you can change law if it's bad, if it's wrong. But we can't just let a lawless mob run through a city and destroy it. Otherwise, the whole nation breaks apart. The whole nation breaks down. He said that we ought to revere the law. Listen to what Lincoln went on to say. This is what he feared most. He said, passion has helped us, but can do so no more. He's talking about the revolution and the passion that helped to create the United States of America. He says, it helped us, but it can do so no more. It will in future be our enemy. Reason, cold, calculating, unimpassioned reason, must furnish all the materials for our future support and defense. Passion might have served us well in the past, but for the future, we're going to need to think logically. We're going to need to think with common sense. We're going to need reason, cold, calculating, unimpassioned reason. It's remarkable, really, how prescient this speech is. And to think that it's coming from a 28-year-old. He said in 1838, let those materials be molded into general intelligence, sound morality, and in particular, a reverence for the Constitution and laws. And that we improved to the last. It says that we remained free to the last, that we revered his name to the last, that during his long sleep, he's talking about George Washington here, that during his long sleep, he's the founding father, that during his long sleep, we permitted no hostile foot to pass over or desecrate his resting place, shall be that which to learn the last trump shall awaken our Washington. That's Abraham Lincoln, by the way, giving a speech about George Washington awakening in the resurrection, a resurrection that he read about in the Holy Bible. pretty amazing to think of this president, the man God used to save the Union during the 1860s. And you see what kind of speech he was giving when he was just in his 20s. He said, finally, upon these let the proud fabric of freedom rest as the rock of its basis, and as truly as it has been said of the only greater institution, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. He said that the only greater institution, the only institution greater than the United States and its founding principles is the church that Jesus described in the book of Matthew and said, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. This is a speech, the Lyceum Address. This is a speech that Lincoln gave more than 20 years before he became president. 20 years! It was in this speech, and Lincoln, of course, was an ambitious man. He really did want to move up the ladder politically, but he loved his country. He sounded the alarm for his country. And of course, when you, I don't have time to get into it here, but when you see God's hand in shaping, not just Lincoln's life, but in shaping the United States of America, it wasn't yet fully developed in the days of Lincoln's youth, nor even during the Civil War period. But it did spread from sea to shining sea in fulfillment of a prophecy that you can read about. Perhaps we'll do it tomorrow. But you can read about it in the first book of the Bible, the book of Genesis. We'll have to reserve some of that history, some of that prophecy for tomorrow. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show. We'll see you tomorrow.